Welcome to The Record on KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke. Have you read the Aziz Ansari story? I'll explain in a moment. If you have read it and you have opinions, give us a call because we're going to try to break down this latest chapter in our conversation about sexual assault, sexual consent, power dynamics. Here's our phone number, 206-543-5869. Again, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call with your thoughts on this, 206-543-5869. Okay, Aziz Ansari is a TV star, stand-up comedian. Here he is calling himself a feminist.
You're a feminist if you go to a Jay-Z and Beyonce concert and you're not like, I feel like Beyonce should get 23% less money than Jay-Z. Also, I don't think Beyonce should have the right to vote. And why is Beyonce singing and dancing? Shouldn't she make Jay a steak? I'm sure he's very tired after walking and rapping those two songs.
Okay, Aziz Ansari is woke, and he's now accused of sexual assault. A website called Babe ran an account of a date between Ansari and a woman who doesn't use her real name. By the way, if you don't want to hear about this detailed account, or you're with someone who you don't want to hear it, you'll want to change the station for a half hour or so, okay? Okay. In this piece, the woman who calls herself Grace describes in detail how she and Ansari met, set up a date, went to dinner, came to his home, and how he repeatedly, and sometimes physically, tried to get her to agree to sex. When my first guest, Seattle author and podcaster Katie Anthony, read this story, she wrote in her blog, Katie, Katie, Kate, she wrote, "I believe her," talking about Grace. "I believe her. I don't agree with her. I'm telling you this not because I think she's wrong, but because I think I am." Katie Anthony, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
There's a lot in that statement, your reaction to this Aziz Ansari piece. What did you mean by that?
Well, it's complicated. Yeah. You know, when I first read this piece, I had kind of a knee-jerk response, which was, ugh, come on, please. Is this really an assault?
You're not alone. I've heard that.
No, absolutely. That's a widely held opinion and a perfectly valid one for people to have. But for me, I was really uncomfortable holding that thought in my head without exploring it a little bit more deeply, because I really had absolutely no trouble believing that this account went down basically as described. But then at the same time, the reason I believed it is because I didn't have to imagine it. I remember it. I think many, many women have been in situations like this where it's a gray area. It's complicated. Yes, I consented to go back to his apartment. I didn't consent to have him, you know, putting his hand in my mouth repeatedly, chasing me around his apartment. For me, I had to examine why I was feeling like I couldn't stand with Grace. Whereas so many of the stories that we've heard, you know, even in the same news cycle, Eliza Dushku's story about being molested when she was a child, a 12-year-old on the set of True Lies by her stunt coordinator, you know, that's a very cut and dry situation. You're either with me or you're a bad person. Mm-hmm. I feel pretty confident making that blanket statement. You either think that molesting a child is wrong or you think it's okay. And it's really, really easy to know which one of those is the dark side. This is much more complicated because issues of consent are so fuzzy and because it's a lot more, and I tend to hate when people are like, it's society. But this piece to me reads a lot more as an indictment of contemporary, you know, heterosexual sex expectations than it does of one person's malice.
Okay, let me pause you there and let's talk more about that. This is Katie Anthony. The blog is Katie, Katie, Kate. She also hosts the podcast Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. And she's in Seattle, one of many, many people who've read this story. And maybe you have too and have thoughts on this. Our phone number is 206-543-5869. So you called, Katie, you called this a normal sex encounter for a woman.
Yep.
Yeah. You have no doubt about that. How normal is it? Why do you think it's that normal?
So it's super normal. It's totally standard. And I think it's a combination of factors, all of which kind of go back to the fact that from pretty early on, We're like spoon-fed this narrative of what a romantic relationship is supposed to look like. If you look at most romantic comedies, there's kind of a predictable trope of like guy pursues girl, girl's not interested in guy, guy comes back again, girl says no again, guy shows up in a really creative slash borderline creepy way, and finally the girl's like, oh, you wore me down, I'll go on one date. Fast forward to they're in love and married and having a million babies and happily ever after. And we're kind of...
He did the right thing by being so persistent.
Exactly.
You know, story.
By refusing to accept her no, he gave himself a happily ever after. And more importantly, he gave her a happily ever after. Mm. She doesn't know what she wants. He should just keep asking and keep asking and keep asking. And that's really the sticking point for this Ansari narrative that we've heard from Babe, is that it was repeated challenging of a stated boundary.
It didn't sound, this is a little fuzzy, isn't it? Because absolutely. It wasn't like she said, no, I do not consent to this. I wish to go home now. It there were all kinds of, as she herself says, verbal and nonverbal cues. So for those who haven't read it, will you give me your take on that?
Absolutely. So she went on a date with a guy that she liked and she was excited to get to know better. And she went back to his apartment after dinner that was fine. It was okay. It wasn't like, oh my God, I'm going to marry this guy. But it was not, I got to get out of here right away. She goes back to his apartment and they begin to kind of fool around. And as a person who, you know, I've been married for a while, I've been out of the dating scene for a little while, but I can speak for myself and most of my friends when I say when you go on a date with someone and you go back to their house, you do it because you might be interested in some action. You might be interested in engaging in that. And when you're...
Right, so word not being clear is a real tripping point. So what do you mean by you might be interested in some action? So say what we mean.
Absolutely. What I mean is I might be interested in engaging in some sex acts with you. Uh-huh. It is an invitation. It's an opening. It's not by any means consent. Walking into someone's apartment is not consent. Ask, you know, any cable guy. Mm-hmm. But when you are engaging in a sexual encounter, especially with a new partner, I think you have a sense of hopefulness. You don't want it to be bad. You want it to be good. You want it to be pleasurable. You want it to feel good for everybody. And you also understand that there's going to be some give and take. You don't know what this person's moves are. You don't know if they're going to like your moves. There's going to be some communication that has to happen. And in a situation where you're new to this person, this is their first date, it's uncomfortable and it's challenging to try to vocalize, I don't like that, please stop. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times people will give nonverbal cues like pulling away, or verbal cues that aren't a hard no, but are more like a, oh, slow down, you know, let's take it easy. Maybe let's just talk for a minute and get to know each other better. All of those should not be interpreted as ignore me, keep going and doing exactly what you're doing, but rather hear me, notice my body language, notice what I'm saying to you, which is, I'm not into this right now. I need you to pause. I need to take a minute. And we need to regroup as a, you know, potential sex partner situation.
Yeah. Okay. And let's see. What was your take, because we're going to hear some others, on this woman's, Grace's, depiction of how Aziz Ansari reacted to her cues, her version of let's slow down.
Yeah. So I think for me, the issue was that she gave both verbal and nonverbal cues of pulling away, saying, let's slow down, excusing herself to go to the bathroom, saying, I don't want this to feel forced, saying, you guys are all the same. That has never meant you guys are all the same and awesome at this.
Yeah.
That is not a compliment.
I don't want to hate you. Right? She said
exactly.
That to him. And by the way, he did. There's this conversation about sexual assault. In her description, she physically pulled his hand toward his junk more than once. So there's a lot going on. Was it sexual assault in your opinion? That got a lot of attention when it's not like she's filed criminal charges against him, but the words are in the piece. in her relating of the evening.
Absolutely. And what I want to do is kind of give you a metaphor to answer your question. So say you're in your neighborhood and your garage door is open. You see your neighbor across the street. You wave to your neighbor. He comes over and you guys are chatting in the driveway for a minute. Then you go back inside. A little while later, you come out. Your lawnmower's gone. Oh, man, somebody stole my lawnmower. You start calling around. You find out your neighbor took your lawnmower out of your garage after you guys were done talking. You think someone stole my lawnmower. He thinks, we're neighbors. I was just in his driveway. He's not going to care. He knows me. He trusts me. Now, is the more helpful conversation, did he steal the lawnmower or borrow the lawnmower? Or is the more helpful conversation, do we need to examine maybe a sense of entitlement that you have to just help yourself because the garage door was open? Does that kind of
yes.
answer your question?
Yes.
So for this, for me, I'm less interested in whether I agree that it's assault or legally it's an assault. This woman felt assaulted. This is an important opportunity for us to trigger a bigger conversation about entitlement and consent and what, you know, positive, healthy sex looks like, even between casual partners, even between people who are never going to get married, you know?
We are going to take a phone call. Again, we're at 206-543-5869. I just want to say one more word because I really enjoyed your piece, Katie. This is Katie Anthony, and the blog is Katie, Katie, Kate, and she's in Seattle. And you talk about how hard this has been for you. You said at one point, I'm mad. I resent Grace for writing about this. What did you mean by that?
It is so painful to consider that experiences that I kind of pre-minimized in order to avoid the minimization that I knew was going to happen if I told other people that I was upset about something that had happened to me. I was upset and I didn't want to even consider the idea that I'd have to go back through all of these other things that had happened to me and confront the truth, which was that this is more than just a funny Sex in the City type episode story that I can tell my girlfriends at a sleepover, you know, that this is actually a really troubling thing that happened to me and that, I have every reason to feel upset or to feel, nervous or scared. And have, lingering feelings and pain after those events. I think so often women are in a situation where we have to choose between being true to ourselves, trusting our gut and saying, hey, that wasn't okay. That was a violation. And understanding that when we say that out loud, we are going to be questioned. We're going to be doubted. We're going to be rejected, basically, by our community. Our story is not going to be upheld. And if we go along with what the community wants to believe it was, which is this weird dating story that is funny and enjoyable to share, then we're betraying, our own gut. We're betraying our own experience. We're kind of gaslighting ourselves, but we aren't being rejected publicly. We aren't being humiliated publicly. So that's the choice a lot of women have to make. And I resented Grace for putting me in that position.
Here was another reaction that got a lot of attention to this piece about, again, the comedian Aziz Ansari and this first date gone wrong, so to speak. This was in The Atlantic. Author Caitlin Flanagan said this. The headline, by the way, of her piece was The Humiliation of Aziz Ansari.
I mean, when I look at young women, I'm in my 50s. They've accomplished so much that is just, women my age just sit back in awe, their goals for careers, the kinds of careers they go into, their fight to be paid equally to men. It's breathtaking. But then in this one core area, they're so weak, which is they jump into these, hookup situations. I have zero moralistic comment on that. And then they become terrified to say the thing that we were taught right away. Don't kiss me if I don't want to be kissed. I absolutely refuse. I'm walking out of here. And for someone who's like the Aziz Ansari in this situation was putting up zero threatening behavior towards her, she said no exactly one time. And his response was, let's put our clothes on. He did put her hand in his crotch a bunch of times, which is certainly wrong. But it's to be exposed this way, I think, is crazy.
Katie, you're doing a lot of visual, a lot of facial expressions. What was your reaction to Caitlin Flanagan's well-publicized take in The Atlantic?
You know, I had a really, really hard time reading it. You know, I think I can't even articulate my thoughts. The subtitle alone to me was extremely problematic. You know, women are angry, temporarily powerful, and very, very dangerous. You know, the idea that women's anger is once again being weaponized against them to shut them up and silence them really, really, really bothers me. The other thing that I find, well, there are a number of things I find very troubling about this particular take on it. One is, like, you don't get to tell somebody else what they experienced. And just because, you know, this person didn't leave as quickly as you would have left, or didn't scream no and instead kind of mumbled no, like, what would have been an acceptable behavior to you to make this an inappropriate and violating experience for this woman? And why does her narrative have to fit your definition of what an assault is? You know, the other thing that I found very difficult about this was her mention of Aziz Ansari's parents' faith. His parents are Muslim. And she painted this accusation as an example of, you know, liberal white women going after people of color. And I think that's an incredibly harmful thing to add into this conversation.
Okay, let's add some more people into this conversation, too. This is Katie Anthony, blogger, podcaster, too, the podcast Mouthy, Messy, and Mandatory here in Seattle. And another one of our Seattle thinkers on this is on the line with us from The Stranger. Writer Katie Herzog weighed in on this piece about Aziz Ansari. Katie, thanks for writing and joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the Katie Hour.
Yes, the Katie Hour. Katie, meet Katie. And you've been listening to Katie Anthony's take, and you had a strong take. Katie, what's on your mind?
Well, I think that when I first read the piece about Ansari, I was sort of, you know, like a lot of women, I was struck by how familiar it was. The difference between me and I think most of the hot takes you've been reading is that I'm gay, I don't sleep with men, and yet I still had this experience, the same experience that Grace had. No one was maybe pulling my hand over to their penis, but that's just because the people that I date don't have penises.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this reminded me of, it reminded me, you know, of my 20s when I was a little bit, I was single and drank a bit more and found myself in situations like that a bit more. And what I took from this, and also from the New Yorker's cat person piece, the viral cat person piece,
mm-hmm.
from a couple months ago.
Short story about bad sex, to put it succinctly.
Yeah, in both situations, Grace and the cat person story and my own experience, was what I didn't do in those situations, you know, and the situations that I was in, there was no man involved. So a lot of people say, like, the reason that women don't more forcefully say no is because they're, you know, they're afraid of being murdered, as though all men are killers. But for me, you know, I didn't ever have the safety wasn't ever an issue. But I still, like Grace, didn't get up and leave in situations that I found myself in that I didn't want to be in. And I think that what's been lost in this conversation is that for whatever reason, you know, socialization, eons of socialization, or something else, women and men, I think to a lesser degree, are really uncomfortable with discomfort and with hurting other people's feelings. And I think that's sort of been lost in this. There we have this sort of, you know, we'll go along with things because we're so uncomfortable with discomfort. So we don't say no, we stay, and then the next day text and say what you did was wrong. And so what I think young women, old women, all people need to do is, you know, I think Caitlin Flanagan made a good point in her Atlantic piece. You know, if we can lean in the office, we need to lean in the bedroom as well. And maybe that's not fair, but that's the world that we live in.
That's Katie Herzog from The Stranger, and Katie Anthony from the blog Katie, Katie, Kate. Do you have any problem with that reminder to women? And I've seen it other places. You're stronger than you know. Yeah, socialization. And now, say your piece. Get out of there. Do what you need to do. Do what you deserve to do.
I agree 100% with what Katie said, that we should be teaching and encouraging that kind of outspoken advocacy for your own personal safety and comfort. You know, nobody should be forced to perform unfelt pleasure at the cost of their dignity. That's deeply humiliating. And I think that, you know, I again agree with Katie that it's not fair to demand this of women who are, you know, in their 20s and 30s and who are finding themselves in situations that are uncomfortable and have to kind of fight against a whole lifetime of wanting to avoid that discomfort that Katie mentioned. It's very uncomfortable. Again, I haven't been single for a while, but I'm in this situation where I have to advocate for my kids. And even talking to a teacher who I have seen do something really inappropriate with my kid, my heart races. I get very uncomfortable. I get scared that someone's going to get mad at me. And it seems like a small thing when I say I get scared that someone's going to get mad at me, but it is a muzzling force and it's completely internal. And it has been given to me by my entire life of watching people say nothing and text the next day or smile and go along in order to save feelings. And so the idea of speaking up at the moment feels impossible. It feels like it's hard to even envision. But as a parent, I force myself to do this because my kids are more important than my comfort. And I think, you know, people who don't necessarily have kids, people who are dating and finding themselves in these situations, have to find something about themselves that they value that much too, to be able to say, like, I'm going to challenge myself to know even before going into this, what am I willing to take? What am I willing to do? And I am willing to walk out.
Katie Herzog from The Stranger, do you have any discomfort about being put in the camp of people who are saying, get out of there? You know, we're endangering the Me Too movement. Aziz Ansari's been shamed and over-accused, and feminists have gone too far.
No, I don't have any fear of being in that camp, but that's purely because I've been in that camp for basically since I started writing on The Stranger and started disagreeing with people about Me Too and other things. So I'm sort of used to the backlash by now and of feeling like there's a bullet sign on my back. But I think you know, Katie made a really good point here, is that it's really this idea of people being angry with you is really overwhelming. And I think the irony of this is that people like Caitlin Flanagan or Barry Weiss in the New York Times, or me, or anybody else who has sort of written out about this on the side of maybe defending Ansari, is that we get that, you know? So I think that that's a really valid fear, because it feels terrible to be the subject of a social media mob. And that was the thing that I really didn't like about this piece being published, was that Grace and Babe.net started a social media mob, and social media mobs, they're not just frequently wrong, they're almost always wrong. People just don't know the whole stories. There's not two sides to stories. There's a million different sides to stories. And I think that by publishing this piece, they just instigated this, you know, this mob without even giving him a chance to respond.
Katie Herzog from The Stranger, thanks for writing and thanks for talking to us on the phone. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Record on KUOW Seattle. We're talking about the piece, the story that's rocketed around the internet about Aziz Ansari, the account of a woman who calls herself Grace, the account of a first date between those two. In the studio with us is podcaster and Seattle author Katie Anthony. We're taking your calls at 206-543-5869. 206-543-5869. Clarissa in Rainier Beach, what's your take on this article and the reaction?
So, I've been sexually assaulted. I was sexually assaulted when I was 8 by one of my older brothers. And then I was raped again when I was 20. And when I was 20, I experienced saying, stop. I don't like that, giving nonverbal cues that I don't like something, and he knew it. And part of the issue is that it's men and boys who aren't taught to say, yeah, no, don't do that, or to understand what nonverbal cues are and what verbal cues are, and to slow down and to stop.
So you're advocating, how can we get there, Clarissa? How can we get to that culture instead of the one you're saying we're in?
So, sorry, I'm at my apartment. I feel like to get there, we need like some education, like definitely in schools, there needs to be some sex ed education for how boys can start understanding the word no or the word stop. Or like for me, during my trauma therapy, I was shown this video about consent and how it relates to consenting for tea. No one wants hot tea poured down their throat, right? Mm-hmm. So being able, like, to say no and for them to understand that no, or being able to say slow down and them understanding that slow down, or being able to show you're uncomfortable with something and them understanding, hey, that's her saying uncomfortable, that needs to be taught at young ages in schools. And we don't get that.
Clarissa in Rainier Beach, thanks for calling in about this.
Thank you.
Clarissa advocating for education at a young age about sex and consent. And also on the line with us is Seattle writer Erica C. Barnett from the blog thecisforcrank.com. Good to talk with you again, Erica.
Good to talk with you.
You've been listening to, we have Katie Anthony in here, Seattle author, podcaster. You blogged about this, Erica, and it was a very sharp and clear and heartfelt argument, as always. What do you want to say about the Aziz Ansari piece and the reaction to it this week?
Well, as a woman who dates men and as someone who's been writing feminist thought and essays and whatnot for many years now, it just makes me really sad to hear people say things like, this is just the way men are, or women need to give really, really clear verbal cues, and maybe that verbal cue wasn't enough, and, you know, men can't read your mind, because the fact is that Aziz Ansari did, first of all, have a chance to respond, and he did respond, saying, you know, essentially, this is a description of what happened. I didn't think you had any problem with it. I had no idea that you were not into it. And from her description in the story, it's extremely clear that she wasn't into it. He was all but chasing her around his apartment from place to place. She went into the bathroom at one point and splashed water on her face for 5 minutes. The whole thing, you know, it is a normal description of a normal date. And that's the problem, that we've normalized this kind of behavior by men and that we expect so little of them. That the onus is, you know, it seems, you know, according to all these hot takes and think pieces and, you know, in our own kind of what Katie Anthony described as our gaslighting of ourselves, that, you know, that it's all on us. And I don't think that a trauma has to be, you know, on the far end of the spectrum of violent rape to be a trauma. And the reason I had such a strong reaction to Katie Herzog's piece is because she kind of mocked the idea that this was a trauma and said, you know, in essence, hey, little girl, it's going to get even worse. So it's real cute that you think this was a traumatic experience, but just wait. And that's sadly true for a lot of women, and it shouldn't be. And so the whole thing makes me very sad, and it's very parallel to the defense of a lot of the other men who've been accused of more extreme versions of sexual misconduct. You know, why didn't she run? Why didn't she blow a rape whistle? Why didn't she, you know, kick him in the crotch? Why didn't she say no louder? Well, she was saying no. We should be asking men why they don't listen.
Well, maybe much to your annoyance, Eric, I'm going to ask you and then Katie both, what your answer is to the why don't. I know it's frustrating, but I still want to know your answer. What stops women from being even more clear and assertive in that moment? Because Katie touched on it a little bit a moment ago, but I want to hear your thoughts, Erica.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's, and this also gets to, you know, why there is a different kind of power differential between men and women than there are between women and women. We are socialized, at least I was, and, you know, and I'm 40 years old now, so I grew up in the 90s. We are socialized to defer to men and men's pleasure, men's comfort, in every single aspect of life. It's not just sex. I mean, one of the things I describe in my story is, you know, despite, or in my response to Katie's piece, is that, you know, despite the fact that I am an outspoken feminist. I talk back a lot. I'm, a nasty woman, whatever. I find myself doing this in life all the time. I step aside for men. I, try to cover up for their gaps in knowledge when we're in meetings. I let people talk over me. And part of that is because, I was trained practically since birth to always prioritize men's comfort over my own. And men know that. A man like Aziz Ansari or frankly, many of the men that I have dated over the years would not just ignore the kind of cues she was giving. At one point, she talks about sort of dissociating from her body and going limp and cold and just not responding to his kisses. That's a pretty obvious cue. Men would be able to pick up on that and should be able to pick up on that, but they don't because they've also been taught that we have to prioritize their pleasure and their comfort and not make things awkward at any cost. So I think it is, the socialization of women in terms of how we deal with men is extremely strong and it's extremely deep. And it's hard to get rid of even when you're aware of it, even when you're woke, it goes really deep.
Erica C. Barnett, thanks for writing about this as always. And thanks for calling in, talking with us too.
Thank you.
And I'm also with Mouthy, Messy, and Mandatory, as her podcast is called, Seattle author, blogger, Katie Anthony. Katie, then what would you like?
Well, I just want to stop you. Yes. I want to answer your question about why women don't push back harder.
Thank you.
First, I want to give snaps to literally everything Erica just said. Amazing. Couldn't agree more. I think we cannot also forget the very real danger of enduring physical harm. If we say no, or if we embarrass, or if we put up too much of a fight, particularly, and this is, speaking as a woman who's been in, hetero relationships my whole life, there are often times that I have been in an encounter with a man that I don't know very well, and you become aware very quickly, he's stronger than I am, he is bigger than I am, he wants something from me. And
it's unspoken, and you know that he knows.
Exactly. Well, and I have an awareness of it because I'm the smaller, weaker person. Even though I'm not a particularly small or weak woman, I am biologically, less well-equipped to defend myself than a man often is. And so violence between sex partners is so real, is so common. And whether that is a real threat in the room, it is always a threat that women are thinking about in the same way that we're thinking about walking to our car at night, in the same way that if there's a guy walking behind us in the parking garage, he may not be aware that he's scaring me, but I am scared.
Yeah. Well, given all of that, Katie, what would you want the norms to be around sexual consent on a date?
Consent is yes, yes, oh my God, yes. And anything less than yes, yes, oh my God, yes, is a wait, we need to talk about this.
Oh my God, yes, meaning not just I consent to what you want, but it's that there's mutual desire.
Yes, the keyword is enthusiastic.
Enthusiastic consent. That's a phrase that's kind of gotten currency, enthusiastic consent.
Yes, freely given enthusiastic consent. So this begs the question, A, does this kill the mojo? And B, what about people who like sex that feels... for people that where the coercion or the illusion of coercion is part of the kink or the vibe that they enjoy.
And by the way, the idea that he's in charge is more widespread than the idea of kink might be, right? I mean, that's underlying a lot. That takes into account a lot of sexual dynamics of that he's making the first move, right?
Yes. So for people who are worried that asking consent or confirming consent is going to kill the mood, you just need to reframe that in your mind as, am I really more okay with having sex that someone's not comfortable with than I am with pausing for a second being like, is this okay? Really? Like, really? You're not willing to do that? Okay, you need to take a hard look at yourself and probably not have sex with anybody while you're doing that. Like, just stop and get some therapy. And the second part is, like, of course getting consent can be sexy if you believe that it's sexy. And it doesn't have to be like, here, sign this contract and swipe on my app. And there are all kinds of different, you know, workarounds that people are trying to find to remove the gray area here. But
you literally, I've heard of that. There's an app for that.
There is an app for that. There's an app for consent. There are apparently on college campuses. I just heard about this on my way in here today, so I don't have hard facts on it, but there's at least one college campus that is trying to have like a consent waiver signed between sex partners. Waivers aren't sexy, but at the same time, if you're taking care of your partner and noticing those nonverbal cues and just confirming, like, is this okay? That's all it has to be. Is this okay? And a hesitation means no. Sudden stillness means no. Looking away means no. Smiling uncomfortably. You know what an uncomfortable smile looks like. I am so done with this myth that men have like face blindness when they're aroused. You know what an uncomfortable person looks like. Don't proceed on an uncomfortable person. Give that person space. Give them a minute. Check in. It's cool. If it's going well, it's not going to kill the mojo. I promise. So just ask is not rocket science. Just ask and notice.
Frequent checking in. Is this okay? Is this still okay? Is this still okay? Sexy. Or can be.
Well, I mean, like, if you're doing the same thing, like, kiss, is this okay? Kiss, is this okay? Kiss, is this okay? You know, like, talking the whole time, depending on who you are, like, if that's what gets you going, rock and roll. But asking, is this okay? And then going for a little while. And when you're going to try something new, is this okay? Particularly if it's a new sex partner, if it's someone that you haven't had any kind of encounter with before, it's really, really important that everyone be comfortable. And that's how people like Aziz Ansari can avoid this kind of public humiliation, and how people like Grace can hopefully, you know, feel safer in sex encounters in the future. It's just by being willing to ask, being willing to say yes, being willing to hear all of the different ways that no can be expressed.
This is Katie Anthony, a Seattle writer. The blog is Katie, Katie, Kate, and we have a phone call. Again, we're at 206-543-5869. We're discussing this Aziz Ansari piece and the reaction to it. 206-543-5869. I'm sure we've tweeted out a link by now at KUOW to this piece about this well-known TV star and comedian and a first date gone badly. Let's take a call from, is it Aliza in Northeast Seattle?
Oh, yes.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I wanted to push back against the narrative that Aziz Ansari's career is derailed and he's the victim of a mob. There's a great piece in Slate today about this. And
still there, Aliza?
Oh, yeah. I'm okay. Also hearing the background KUOW phone call person telling me to hold on.
Okay, yeah. Turn the radio down if you can, but go on.
No, my radio's not on.
Okay. Okay, well.
Okay, so I hear the other callers in the background. I'll try to ignore that.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, so Aziz Ansari wrote a book about modern love. He is well attuned to the nuances of casual relationships. This is not like his first date, and he has put a lot of his own personal experience out there through his comedy and through his show. And he has not, to my knowledge, been threatened with losing his show or his livelihood. This is an important conversation that we as a society need to have, and I'm glad we're having it. And I think his career will survive it, and I don't think he's a victim.
And that's an important point, Aliza, when a big part of this reaction is, like, the humiliation of Aziz Ansari, et cetera, is that we've gone too far. Now it's a witch hunt. Now we're victimizing people with no due process. So you're pointing out that, well, maybe, or this is not your words, but maybe Aziz Ansari will do an hour-long stand-up special on this next year. We don't really know that his life is ruined.
Yeah, or maybe he'll cast Miley Cyrus as his scene partner and do a scene about it.
Mm. Aliza in Northeast Seattle, thanks a lot for that.
Thank you.
Any comment, Katie Anthony?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I think people are like, oh, it's so unfair that she named him, but she gets to be anonymous. Well, that Babe piece did a lot of things wrong. I have a lot of criticism of the Babe.net piece, the original piece. But one of the things that you do when you are reporting a sexual assault is you don't name the victim. You don't name the survivor of that assault. It's not unfair did he not do this thing? Is somebody lying about him? No, it's okay to have
confidence. Well, actually, we don't know. Well, but we haven't heard Aziz Ansari deny those details.
He said, I remember this. I thought everything was okay, but she obviously didn't.
Right.
He hasn't been like, it's a lie, right. You know? And so I think it's okay for people to face consequences for their actions. It's okay for you to have treated somebody badly and then have to deal with the aftermath of that. That's okay. He is going to be fine. And he is 100% not a victim here.
That's an interesting part of all of this is the idea that, you know, maybe privacy is overrated sometimes. When we talk about poor Aziz Ansari, who's had apparently, possibly a true account, now instead of having it being contained in the four walls of an apartment, oh, okay, so now we can all read and make up our own minds and have this conversation that we're having right now on KUOW about what we want consent to be.
Exactly. And I think, again, and I said this in the blog post that I wrote about it, which is called Not That Bad. You know, it's hard for me to read the piece that was reported in Babe and come away with the idea that Aziz Ansari is an irredeemable monster. That's really hard for me to pull. But I think that we have to keep searching for the nuance in this conversation. It is an important opportunity for us to talk about what a normal, even woke, even trying to be a nice guy can do to a woman if he is not paying attention.
On Facebook, Josh writes, for me, it's further evidence that the problem is the behavior more than the perpetrators, especially the way that this behavior is accepted in society. It's a reminder that this is not a contest where we should focus on who's the worst, grossest, or most lecherous. The whole thing does make me reevaluate my experiences, which can be quite uncomfortable, even though most of them are in the very distant past. And I appreciate that, Josh, and I appreciated that in your piece in your blog, Katie, Katie, Kate, where really a lot of what you were talking about was, yeah, this is uncomfortable. Let's go there and not run away from it.
That's absolutely
true. We're all implicated. I forget your words, but that you said yourself, I think you said something like, yeah, you've been socialized to take advantage. I've done it. Something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here's the thing. After I wrote that piece, I had a reader write into me and say, hey, you know, the way that you're discussing this is good, but you're also very trans exclusionary. And you're also talking about this in a binary way. You're also talking about this in a heteronormative way. And so I, in trying to further a conversation, also am in a lot of ways at fault. And I am still excluding people from a conversation. You know, there is nobody in this Me Too movement who is above growth. You know, and when I hear people talking about like, oh, this is the end of the Me Too movement, you know, it's like, you know, you're having a brunch and somebody brought a quiche to the brunch that is a little more undercooked than you usually like your quiche. Are you going to just say like, oh, that's not how I usually like my quiche? Or are you going to like cancel brunch and burn down the building? You know, this was always going to be messy. Anybody who told you that having this, what Frances McDormand called the tectonic shift, that going through this was going to be simple, that we were always going to agree, we were always going to see eye to eye, you need to get your money back from that person because this is messy. Women are disagreeing with women. Men are disagreeing with men. We're all disagreeing with each other. You know, non-binary people are disagreeing with people. It is a huge mess. And the goal is not to clean up the mess. The goal is to look at the mess.
Yeah, and we don't have to make enemies out of each other in the process.
Absolutely.
Robert is in Mukilteo. Robert, thanks for your call. What do you want to say?
Going back a little bit to the whole the kind of rape culture story. So essentially, my daughter is 18 months old, and I've been like taking her to socialize a little parks and museums and stuff like that recently. And in the past 18 months, like I can hear the person in the background. Am I speaking? Am I on the air?
Sorry about that. We'll try to figure that out. But you sound great. Please continue, Rob.
Okay. Yeah. Well, essentially, every single time I've gone to the park recently, she has been either pushed or hit by like a little boy. And I've become hesitant to even take her there because not only has that, like when that happens, like she'll fall over and she'll cry and stuff. And like, that's all, you know, that happens, you know, kids play, you know, and kids are kids. But then what has happened directly after that is I'll kind of like stand up and expect a little boy to kind of say like, oh, you know, I'm sorry or whatever, you know, and I'll kind of look over and the parent has been like multiple times has happened. The parent will be watching my kid who's crying and legitimately will just kind of laugh and say, like, oh, look how cute that was, you know? Mm. And I'm just like, excuse me, you know, like, that wasn't cute at all to me, you know? Like, yeah. My kid's, like, clearly upset and, like, crying. And I'm thinking about it in my head, and I'm like, if, like, the tables were turned, like, if my daughter were to have done that to this little boy, I don't think that that would have been, like, a scenario where, like, oh, that was, like, so cute.
Robert,
you know?
Yes. Robert Immokalteo, thanks a lot for sharing that. I want to, Katie, I'm with someone. I've got a boy, and you've got at least, how many
I've
boys?
I've got two little boys.
Two little boys.
Three-year-old and a five-year-old.
Robert, thanks for calling. Yes, Katie.
So I can tell you that I have had my little boys push their fair share of kids on the playground. I have two very, very physically active, strong little boys who don't have a lot of impulse control. Or, I mean, my five-year-old's getting there. Three-year-old's Wild West. Mm. But I will tell you that it is the parent's responsibility to get in there. And it's not, I personally don't hold with the idea that you should be asking, you know, a two-year-old or a four-year-old to apologize, because they don't really know what that means. But they should be, you know, from an early, early age, you should be teaching your kids what respect means and what respect looks like. And that's why, you know, a lot of parents nowadays, they don't force their kids to hug or kiss people, even grandma or grandpa, who, you know, they see once a year. You're teaching your kids that they have the right to say what their body is and isn't going to do. I think, you know, for parents of little boys out there who are worried about, you know, keeping their boys out of this kind of like rushing river of rape culture, you know, my husband and I have talked a lot about how to do this with our kids. It starts with modeling at home. You know, when we're wrestling with the kids or tickling the kids and one of them says stop, even if they're still laughing, we put our hands up and we take a step back.
In my family, the two words are my body. My little boy is the sweetest thing, but he is grabby and just, you know, and huggy and too much and too long. And so my wife and I, all the kids, as you say, even if it's me wanting to kiss him on the cheek, if for whatever reason, if they're feeling, who knows why, if they say my body, we all know what that means. And no means no.
Absolutely. Stop means stop the first time is another really good one. And as far as those situations on the playground, you know, I think it's okay for you to say to a little kid who just pushed your daughter, like, I wonder if she's okay. Mm. She looks like hurt. That must have been scary. Do you think she's okay? You know, not in an accusatory, you know, because I genuinely don't believe that young children have malice toward each other. They just have impulses that they don't understand how to control quite yet. But it is 100% your right as a parent to advocate for your daughter and say, I don't know if she's, can we check on her together? And then for your daughter, I've heard, you know, friends of mine who have daughters say, you know, they encourage their daughters from a really early age to start saying, I don't like that,
yeah,
or stop.
We've been talking about impulses that we don't control in many, many ways, and heard from a lot of you. Thank you. And also from Seattle author, podcaster Katie Anthony. Her blog is called Katie, Katie, Kate. Her podcast is called Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. And I really appreciate you coming in and having this dialogue with me and with all the listeners.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure. Nice job in the piece too, Katie Anthony. And we're going to come right back with more of KUOW's The Record. By the way, we have tweeted out a link to that whole Aziz Ansari piece about so much fuss about which is being made and legitimately, productively so. Join us on Twitter at KUOW. Well, the people of Hawaii just lived through a false alarm about a North Korean missile. And then 2 days later, Vancouver, British Columbia hosts an international summit devoted to preventing a real nuclear war. The U.S. Secretary of State was there, Rex Tillerson, at this Vancouver summit. Lots of countries represented. Greece was there for some reason. Belgium, Colombia, Luxembourg. Let's bring in Vancouver Sun columnist Vaughn Palmer. Hi, Vaughn.
Hi, Bill. This was kind of a reunion in Vancouver this week, Monday and Tuesday. The common element of the 20 countries that attended the summit, very timely summit, the common element was that most of them served together with the United Nations forces during the Korean War 60 years ago.
Well, and we should talk about who was not at that summit, right?
Yeah, Russia and China. So the American government organized this thing in partnership with the Canadians who fought in Korea. And the idea was to have all these countries get together, but to have them talk about sanctions against North Korea. So what can be done to increase the sanctions? What isn't being done? Of course, you're quite right that the timeliness of it was not just the false alarm in Hawaii, but the apparent agreement between North and South Korea to kind of partner up on the coming Winter Olympics. So
right.
It's all pretty timely. But yeah, I mean, what were they going to accomplish? They sat around, they talked, they emphasized that the threat of nuclear war is pretty alarming, and there was some discussion of stepping up sanctions. The Canadian government put up some money to help finance that, but this is a pretty long, hard slog for all the countries involved in this. You know how little progress has been made so far.
Yes, indeed. Why is it that Russia and China, a couple of obvious participants, were not in Vancouver, B.C. for this?
Well, they were on the other side during the Korean War, I guess.
Yeah, right.
I hate to say it, but that's sort of the reason.
Wow.
And they haven't exactly been very helpful so far. I think this was really an attempt to get the countries that are roughly allied in enforcing the UN sanctions together. Now, there's been some discussion about, the South Koreans have stopped oil shipments going into North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that's still getting through the sanctions. So there's some discussion on that. There's some other issues as well. But, yeah, Russia and China aren't very happy about not being invited. But I think there's also a view among many of the participants that they haven't exactly been helpful to date.
Any news come out of this, Vaughn? What do you find most interesting about this Vancouver, B.C. summit?
I think the Canadian government's agreement to participate in enforcing the sanctions, the fact that everybody's still being pretty careful about blockading ships carrying oil to North Korea. And as I said, it comes against the backdrop of the Olympic agreement and everybody hoping, gee, I wonder if that means that the two countries are actually going to be lowering the temperature rather than raising it. The rest of it was things we're not going to do. For example, the United States government reiterated that it has no intention of ending military work with South Korea. They say that's an important part of security in the region. It is not something they're going to give up as long as North Korea is still working on increasing its capacity to build nuclear weapons and to launch missiles.
That's Vancouver Sun columnist Vaughn Palmer at the site of this summit this week with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and many others, not Russia, not China, talking about what to do about North Korea. Vaughn, thanks for this.
Bye-bye, Bill.
And as Vaughn mentioned, South Korea says the rival Koreas have agreed to form their first joint Olympic team and have their athletes march together during the opening ceremony of next month's Winter Olympics in the South. Seoul's unification ministry says the Koreas got to that agreement during talks this week in Panmunjom, and those measures, of course, will have to pass muster with the International Olympic Committee. You're listening to The Record on KUOW 94.9 Seattle News and Information, and this show is put together by Amina Alsadi, Ajua Jim Abrempong, Bon Huberman, Jason Pagano, and I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for listening. Please tune in again tomorrow.